Sarah Mylifer was one of those chosen. As the doctors requested, she opened her mouth wide so they could prod at her teeth, kept still as they probed firmly around her nose and throat, offered the vulnerable inside of her arm so they could take a vial of blood. The exam then transferred to the dark room. Here, Catherine Drinker examined a number of these women, some quite intimately, to determine to what degree they were luminous when sufficiently in the dark. Oh, that luminosity. That glow. Catherine Drinker was stunned by it. As the women undressed in the darkroom, she witnessed the dust lingering on their breasts, their undergarments, the inside of their thighs. It scattered everywhere, as intimate as a lover's kiss, leaving its trace as it wound around the women's limbs, across their cheeks, down the backs of their necks and around their waists. Every inch of them was marked by its feather-like dance that touched their soft and unseen skin. It was spectacular and tenacious once it had infiltrated the women's clothing. The drinkers noted that it persisted in the skin, even after vigorous washing. The drinkers didn't limit their study to the plant. They visited Dr. Barry and also met some of the dial painters who were now exhibiting such similar symptoms, including Grace Fryer. Thanks to the attentions of the expert Dr. McCaffrey in New York, however, Grace was the exception to the rule. The drinkers were pleased to note that she had recovered satisfactorily from her illnesses. The same could not be said for Marguerite Carlo. Finding no relief with Barry, she had started consulting Dr. Kniff, who treated Molly Maggia. Marguerite's appearance, she who had once favoured dramatic feathered hats and glossy fashion, was by now very bad. Yet the worst was not on the outside, despite her deathly pale skin and emaciated body, but on the inside, from the constant discharge of foul pus in her mouth. She was suffering excruciatingly. Kniff attended her as best he could. "At least once a day I'd go up there," he remembered. It was a 15 to 20 mile drive from his office to the Carlo home on Main Street, Orange. But on occasion he would attend her from 2 to 6 times a day. "Sometimes," he recalled, "I have been with her as high as 3 days and 3 nights on a stretch." Such close attention was well beyond the budget of the Carlos, so Kniff was essentially working for free. It was good of him, but it didn't necessarily mean that Marguerite was receiving the best qualified attention. Yet Kniff knew more than most about the disease, even if he didn't, at that time, understand the full implications of his growing knowledge. Dr. Kniff was a medical man, through and through. When Molly Maggia's jawbone had so shockingly broken against his fingers, he had been fascinated by it. And so he had kept it, this oddly moth-eaten, misshapen piece of bone. Every now and again, after her death, he had examined it, turning it over in his hands. But he was none the wiser. Anyway, she had died of syphilis, whatever the strangeness of her bones. He'd therefore popped the fragment into his desk drawer, where he kept his X-ray negatives, and, eventually, it slipped his mind. And then, one day, his duties had required him to dig through that crowded desk drawer for the X-ray films. He had scrambled through the bits and pieces he kept in there, searching for them. To his astonishment, when he finally pulled them out, the films were no longer ebony black. Instead, they were fogged, as though something had been emanating onto them. But there was nothing in that drawer but old files and forgotten scraps of bone. He turned the X-ray film this way and that. The spoiling of the film was undeniable. It was a message, though little did Kniff know it, but its meaning was unclear. Molly Magia was still voiceless, even after all this time.